and good morning. I'm Tom Weber. This is NPR News special coverage of Governor Mark Dayton's announcement of his pick to replace Al Franken in the U.S. Senate. Franken announced last week he will resign in coming weeks. We don't have a specific date yet, but what we're going to do now is head to the Minnesota Capitol for the governor's remarks. NPR News has learned that Governor Dayton will name his lieutenant governor, Tina Smith, to be the U.S. senator, and she will run for that seat in the 2018 special election. That election will fill the seat until 2020, the final 2 years of Franken's term. Brian Bax covers politics for NPR News and is joining us from the Capitol here this morning. Brian, this is taking place where? Are we in the basement here today? What's happening?
We're on the ground floor in kind of one of the more ornate hearing rooms. And in fact, it's now official. The governor's staff has handed out the paperwork that says that Tina Smith will serve as the United States Senator. So it's no longer unofficial. It will be official momentarily.
And say more about you're in this ornate room. You were telling me that even if that official statement wasn't a hint, even if our reporting wasn't a hint, you were seeing people in the room who come from Tina Smith's past because she has a long career in a number of different avenues, doesn't she?
That's right. Aside from the dozens of news media, there are people who have worked around Tina Smith. We've seen Lee Sheehy, who's worked around her in various capacities, Connie Lewis, who worked around her during her Planned Parenthood days. We've seen Mayor R.T. Ryback, the former Minneapolis mayor, who served with Tina Smith. She was his chief of staff. And, of course, there are also many Dayton administration officials and alumni. She's had a deep role in this administration for many years, first as chief of staff and then since 2014's election as lieutenant governor as well.
She's certainly well-known around the Capitol, Brian. How well-known is she in the state of Minnesota? She is the lieutenant governor, but is she a household name?
It depends on who you ask. Among DFL activists, she's very well known. She's been around the state quite a bit, especially in recent years as she was considering a run for governor. As you know, Governor Dayton is not running for a third term, so there was speculation that she would try for that office. She doused that speculation earlier in the year, saying that she was not going to run. So this puts her kind of back in the political limelight. She's been around the state quite a bit. She's been in the trenches for her party for decades, so many people around Minnesota politics know her quite well.
Was her naming a surprise?
Not really. She was kind of seen as the front runner from the moment that Al Franken decided that he wasn't going to continue on in the Senate. She's one of Governor Dayton's most trusted allies and advisors, so he looked first to her. We're not sure exactly who else he looked at and how hard he looked at other people. We'll try to find that out very soon. But people were speculating early on that she would be the pick. The big question was whether she would run for the seat, which we're told she will. And now Tina Smith and Governor Mark Dayton are walking into the room. You might hear the clicks of the camera. Tina Smith is kind of right behind the governor as he moves toward the podium, and her family members are with her, her two sons and her husband. Mark Dayton is now taking his speech out of his pocket, and we'll go to him now. He's just looking around the room.
Is that good, Matt? You guys can actually stand.
NPR News special coverage here. Governor Mark Dayton announcing Tina Smith as the new senator for Minnesota.
You're set. The Minnesota Constitution assigns me the responsibility to fill the upcoming vacancy in the United States Senate. I've given this important decision the most careful consideration. First and foremost, I want to appoint the person who I believe will best represent the people of Minnesota in the Senate. I selected our outstanding Lieutenant Governor, Tina Smith. I've worked with many superb public officials during my 40-year career. Tina stands first and foremost among them. She's extremely intelligent, quick to learn, yet always open to hearing others' views. She genuinely likes people, and people like her. She has impeccable integrity and the highest personal and professional standards. She will be a senator of whom all Minnesotans can be proud. Tina knows Minnesota. She's traveled extensively throughout our state She knows our citizens, our challenges, and our opportunities. We've worked closely together during the past 7 years, and she deserves great credit for our administration's achievements, which have led to our just being named the best-run state in America. Before making my decision, I listened to many Minnesotans who shared their views with me. But this final decision is mine alone. Again, it is based entirely upon my conviction that Tina Smith will be the best possible senator for the people of Minnesota. It is now my honor to introduce Minnesota's next United States Senator, Tina Smith.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Governor Dayton, wherever you are. There you are. I accept this appointment, and it will be my great honor to serve Minnesota as United States Senator. Though I never anticipated this moment, I am resolved to do everything that I can to move Minnesota forward, and I will be a fierce advocate for in the United States Senate for economic opportunity and fairness. This is a difficult moment for us, but even now I am filled with optimism for Minnesota, this big, welcoming, diverse, and resilient place that has been my home for over 30 years. As Lieutenant Governor, I have traveled everywhere in Minnesota. Being elected Lieutenant Governor is a little like being invited into Minnesota's living room. I've talked to people in their homes, at their jobs, in city halls, and their places of worship. We've talked about what worries them, what keeps them up at night, and what gives them hope. And I've learned a lot from that. You know, Minnesota has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. But I've heard stories from families who are working 2 full-time jobs and still struggling to find a good place to live. Minnesota has some of the best schools. But I've talked to moms who are faced with driving 60 miles every day to get their child to a good preschool. Minnesota has more people with health insurance than almost any other state. Yet I've talked to farmers who have lost access to their longtime doctors and can't afford the health insurance premiums. Minnesota iron ore built this country. Yet I've talked to rangers who are worried about the future of their small towns. And Minnesota is often named one of the best states for women. Yet even here, women still earn less than men, and women of color and Native American women have even fewer opportunities. We have so much opportunity in this state and this country, but we have so much work to do to make sure that that opportunity is broadly shared. Paul Wellstone said often, "We all do better when we all do better." And I will serve Minnesota in the United States Senate, guided by these words and led by these Minnesota stories. Just over 3 years ago, we reelected Senator Franken with a mandate to work hard to keep Minnesota moving forward, to improve people's lives. And with his decision to step down, it is the responsibility of our governor to appoint a person to fill this vacant spot. Now my job will be to go to Washington, D.C. to continue working on behalf of Minnesota and our country. And I will do this in my own way, using my own best judgment and experience, but always with the people of Minnesota in mind. And it is up to Minnesotans to decide for themselves who they want to complete Senator Franken's term. They will make this decision in a special election next November. I will run in that election, and I will do my best to earn Minnesotans' support. And I believe the way to do that is by being the best senator that I can be. I want to thank Senator Franken for his service. He has been a champion for our state, and I know that he and Franny will continue to work for our state and for our country. And I also want to thank Senator Franken's excellent staff, both here in Minnesota as well as in Washington, D.C., for your work to help Minnesota. You do that every day in thousands of ways. This work continues, and we still need you. I want to take a moment also to express my deep gratitude for the opportunity to serve with Governor Mark Dayton. I have seen how Mark brings integrity, heart, and a passion for justice to his job. He is an exceptional leader, and I am so proud to have served with him. The men and women in our office and the 34,000 people who serve in state government are some of the best, most dedicated public servants that I have ever known. I have loved this job, and I have been so proud to call you colleagues. My family is with me here today. Didn't want to stand too close, weren't, you know. My husband, Archie, our sons, Sam and Mason, and their wives and our daughters, Emily and Julia. I'm so proud of you. I love you, and I'm so grateful for your love and support. Finally, I want to thank the people of Minnesota for this opportunity to have served you in the state capitol and for your support and encouragement as I become your senator. You know, the governor keeps a sign in his office that says, "None of us is as smart as all of us." And I will take my own version of that sign with me to Washington, D.C., as a reminder of the wisdom of my fellow Minnesotans. This Senate seat has a strong, abiding legacy of service and social justice that runs back to Paul Wellstone, Walter Mondale, Gene McCarthy, and Hubert Humphrey. As I take this new position in this extraordinary time that we're in, I will do my best to move this legacy, but to move it forward towards a better, more inclusive, and more just future for all of us. Thank you very much, and the governor and I would be happy to take a few questions.
Governor, you said that this decision was yours and yours alone. Did you get a lot of pressure from national Democrats on who you should choose and whether that person should just be a placeholder or run again in 18?
The only person in Washington I spoke with outside of our Minnesotans and our congressional delegation is Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer. He did not express a view about who the selection should be. He did believe that, does believe that the person would should run for the office next year. You know, he has a strong and legitimate stake in this decision as the Democratic leader, and obviously wants to hold the seat next year. But I didn't get pressure, and the decision is mine, and Tina's decision to run for the seat next year is her decision.
Lieutenant Governor, any concerns that you might be perceived as kind of installing a senator and being kind of the kingmaker here?
Well, queen maker. I'm doing what the Constitution of Minnesota instructs me to do. It's unequivocal that the governor appoints someone to fill the vacancy until the next general election, which will be in November of 2018. So, and as Tina said, at that point, the people of Minnesota will decide, properly so, for the remainder of the Senate term. So I'm doing what the Constitution of Minnesota gives me the responsibility to do.
Lieutenant Governor, you
just... I'd like to just respond to that, too. I think anybody who knows the voters of Minnesota know that they can't be told what to do. And my purpose is to go out and ask for those voters' support, and that is my job to do. And I think that that's just such an important part of this this story that we're telling today.
Lieutenant Governor, there was some speculation that you would not want to go past November of 2018, in part because you declined to run for governor. What changed your mind, if that was accurate?
Well, this is an extraordinary moment, and in moments like this, you have to ask yourself, I had to ask myself, what was the best way for me to serve? What contribution could I make? What would that look like? I had to assess that. And as I did that assessment, it became clear to me that I'm prepared to do this, I'm qualified to do this, that I have a unique role to play here. And after I realized that, it was a very, very easy decision for me to make.
Governor, how about the cascade of constitutional consequences here? You presumably will have a lieutenant governor who's a Republican if the current presiding officer of the Senate remains. Is there talk of special session? Can you talk us through that?
Well, I don't have all of those answers. I'm not a lawyer. I'm told by my in-house legal counsel that the Constitution and the state statute are clear that the lieutenant, that the president of the Senate becomes the lieutenant governor, and that she cannot hold two offices simultaneously. But I've asked the Attorney General for a formal opinion, made that request in writing yesterday, expect to receive that whenever, shortly, because this is not my determination to make. My goal is to assure Minnesotans that I'm following, and we're all following, what's prescribed in the Minnesota Constitution and in statute, without favor to one side or another, and that will be what I will carry out to do. If there are those who want to consider a special session or something of that nature, I haven't really considered it at all myself. I'd have to, the same standard I have for special sessions previously, all four caucus leaders would have to agree in writing to the conditions and the limits. But again, I'm not going to go pursue that, and I'm well prepared, looking forward to working with Senator Fischbach. I called her. We exchanged messages just before this event, and I'll follow up with her and invite her to lunch on Friday. I don't know if she's available then, but if not, then next week, and I'll look forward to working cooperatively with her.
So you've not explored with Senator Gazelka calling a special session so a new Senate president could be elected of your party?
Senator Gazelka and I have talked. He's broached the subject. I said, you know, it was premature until I made this decision. I've not had any lengthy discussion with him. And again, I'm not going to pursue a special session. I'm totally fine with the provisions in the law and the Constitution as they exist, and I'll follow them as they exist unless somebody proposes to, in some legal way, alter that sequence.
Lieutenant Governor, when Senator Franken resigned, he noted the irony of him leaving the office while President Trump is remaining in the Oval Office. Do you think there should be an investigation of President Trump, or that he should resign because of the allegations against him?
You know, I am going to be focused completely over the next couple of weeks on getting ready to become a senator and moving into Washington, D.C. the 1st of January, and I am not going to get into a bunch of the discussion about what's going on in Washington right now. I think that I want to say, though, that that sexual harassment is disrespectful to people, and it can't be tolerated. And that I think it's quite interesting. I think we are in the middle of a sort of sea change in attitudes about this right now. I think in some ways this sea change is being led by young women who tell women of my generation that maybe some of the things that we put up with during our lives we shouldn't have to put up with. And that is a good thing, and it is so important that we don't slide backward, that we continue to move forward. And I can promise you that I will be working on these issues when I get to Washington, D.C., but that'll be for January.
Lieutenant Governor, did you agree with Senator Franken's decision to resign? Was that his only choice? And as a follow-up, do you have any idea when he's going to leave and you can take over?
Well, you know, Senator Franken, I've spoken with Senator Franken, and I know that he made the decision that he made thinking about what was best for Minnesotans. I respect the decision that he made, and I think that the important thing now is to figure out a way to move forward, and that is what I'm completely focused on.
Has he told you when he'll be resigning?
Oh, pardon me. The Franken staff is working to finalize the details of this. Their number one concern is to make sure that the transition works smoothly for their staff, and we expect that it'll happen the very early part of January. I just can't tell you exactly what date yet.
Will you keep the Franken staff?
You know, the Franken staff is widely respected on Capitol Hill and here in Washington, across party lines. They're an outstanding staff, and I very much hope to continue working with them. I will go and talk with them this afternoon, and I'm sure that there'll be lots of questions, but I really hope that many of them can continue to serve the state.
You're going to Washington this afternoon?
No, that'll just be to their office in St. Paul.
Lieutenant Governor, you've had a big hand in Destination Medical Center in Rochester. Will someone take over for you there, or will you still be involved?
Well, over the next few weeks, this was an unanticipated moment, and there are lots of issues that we have to work on in terms of transition, and that will be one of my top priorities, to work on that transition. So I can't tell you exactly what we'll do there, but that is one of the most important, that is the most important economic development, largest economic development project that has ever happened in this state, and it is incredibly important to me, not only as Lieutenant Governor, but also as Senator, that project proceeds well. And so that'll be the main thing on my mind over the next couple of weeks.
Governor, did you give any consideration to Governor Carlson's suggestion that you hold off on this until after the ethics process plays out? Did you give any consideration to that?
I took my guidance from Senator Franken. He made it clear when he made his announcement that his intention was to resign, and has affirmed that in everything I've seen and heard since. So that was set on that basis that I'm have been proceeding.
Do you have anything in writing from Senator Franken?
I don't have anything in writing, no.
Does that make you nervous at all? I know for the state legislature, you waited until you had resignations in writing before you...
Well, I'm announcing today my intention to appoint a lieutenant governor to the Senate vacancy, assuming that it occurs. I'm not going to speculate otherwise, but I'm not signing any documents today either way. And again, as Lieutenant Governor said, we'll be working on a smooth transition. But I know Senator Frank is a man of his word. I know he gave this a great deal of very intense thought. And again, I fully expect that he will follow through and resign, as Tina said, in early January. And this will be a smooth transition. And the people of Minnesota will be served by two United States senators on a continuing basis.
Governor, can you consider anybody else for the job, including a person of color?
I consider a number of people. There are so many extremely well-qualified people in Minnesota who would be superb in this position. So I certainly considered a number of other people, got a great deal of advice, both solicited and unsolicited, which is understandable. And I listened to it all and considered it carefully. And Bettina is my selection, and I'm very confident that I made the right decision.
Governor, how many people were on your short list, and
I don't think
did you come to your decision?
Over the last 5 days, as Lieutenant Governor said, this was not expected, and I didn't I certainly thought about it prior to Senator Franken's announcement, but I didn't. We didn't do any due diligence, or didn't bring in other people into a circle of conversation, and that's been part of the process for the last 5 days, as well as when it became clear to me that Tina should be my appointment, the considerations about her replacement and the factors there. So it's been a process, and it's one that is now concluded, and my focus is on going back to being the best governor I can for the people of Minnesota, and Tina's focus is on serving the people of Minnesota as best she can, assuming that she is officially becomes a United States Senator.
Governor, how will you be different from Senator Franken? What can Minnesotans expect?
Well, Senator Franken has been a real champion for this state, and he's worked on issues of importance like mental health for children and cracking down on some of the bad things that are happening in our finance sector in this country. And I respect his work. But I will take on this role in my own way, using my own judgment and experience. And that's what I can tell you. That, I think, is the most important thing.
Lieutenant Governor, how will you respond when you run for the seat on your own to the inevitable attacks about your time as an official of Planned Parenthood?
The work that I did at Planned Parenthood helped to provide health insurance, health care, helped provide health care and treatment for sexually transmitted diseases and cancer screenings to thousands and thousands and thousands of women. I'm proud of that work.
But it's not on your bio, apparently.
It is on my bio.
How about on your LinkedIn page?
I don't have a LinkedIn page.
Well, you let us know when you get one.
If I do have a LinkedIn page, I didn't know. Let's just leave it at that.
Whether state government control will put the title to Republicans and there's no change made in that number two.
Well, I absolutely wholeheartedly support Tina Smith for the Democratic Senate nomination, and I hope that the people of Minnesota will elect her in November of 2018. I intend to be alive then.
That's good.
And even at least a couple months thereafter. it's a valid concern. Anything can happen to anybody in this world. And, that in an ideal world, this would not be unfolding. But in the reality of the options, the choices that were available, and again, my top priority is giving Minnesota, who I believe would be the very best United States senator, starting the day that she takes office. And I think she'll prove that to Minnesotans, and that is the overriding consideration. So, again, I look forward to working with Senator Fischbach if she becomes the lieutenant governor, and we'll develop a cooperative relationship, and I'll do my best to stay healthy so that she gets to be lieutenant governor for the next 400 and some days.
Governor Dayton, from the beginning, was it your position that you should appoint someone who would want to run on the special election?
Yeah, I was undecided when this process began, and I've got, you know, different points of view on both sides of that question. But when I finally considered all the aspects of it, I was very clear that I wanted to appoint somebody who would run for the seat next year.
Explain why that's important to you?
Well, I think it gives Minnesotans, again, someone to size up and assess in the real world of Washington politics and Senate service. And I hope it has the benefit of uniting our DFL party behind two really outstanding United States Senators, Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith. And that is something that will benefit other candidates as well. I'm a Democrat, obviously, and I want to, it's a Democratic seat right now, and I want to do whatever I can and just have it be held by a Democrat into 2019, 2020.
Lieutenant Governor.
I want to just say one thing about that. I think it's really important also to remember that if you have a senator, when I go in and I am planning on running for election in 2018, I am demonstrating that I have a commitment to this job, and that is so important. There is so much good that can be done for Minnesota over the next 11 months, especially if you have a senator who is committed to working to stay there. And that was uppermost in my mind as I thought about this decision.
Lieutenant Governor, it could cost $10 million or more to wage this campaign in 18. Are you confident you can do that? And then if you turn around again and run in 2020, it could be your full-time job, raising money.
Well, the conversation about campaigns and elections, I want to wait for another day, but I can tell you I shouldn't be underestimated, and if I weren't confident, I wouldn't be doing this.
Very good.
And that is live from the Minnesota State Capitol here, the announcement by Governor Mark Dayton that Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith will be his pick for the United States Senate. You heard it there and here on NPR News with the special coverage. And then they took several questions from the media who were there in the audience. This was on the ground floor of the Capitol in a hearing room. And our colleague Mike Brian Bax was there. You'll be hearing from him throughout the day as well. But here in the studio, Mike Mulcahy is with me, NPR News' political editor. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
And Rachel Stassenberger is joining me on the phone, a longtime political reporter at the Minnesota Capitol, most recently at the Pioneer Press. It was recently Rachel Stassenberger Day in the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much. So, Rachel, thanks so much for joining us here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mike, I'm just going to just start off with your reflections. What did you hear? What didn't you hear in the statement there today in the news conference?
Well, I think we heard the headline right at the end where Tina Smith said, I should not be underestimated. She says she's running again in the special election next year. She says she's committed to the job. She says she can do it. And Governor Dayton says his primary reason for making this decision was he thought she would be the best senator for the state of Minnesota. Now, this is going to be quite an undertaking. I think we were jotting down in the back of an envelope the other day, if this race costs $15 million, as Senate races have the past few, especially for an open seat, that would mean she would have to raise $300,000 per week between now and Election Day in 2018.
That also means the Republican candidate would have to do that as well.
That's true. It's a serious undertaking for whoever wants to do this. Mm-hmm. We don't know who the Republican is yet. We don't know if other Democrats will want to take a shot at this over the next year. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. Governor Dayton said that the decision was his alone. Mm-hmm. I think the other news we heard was the governor said Michelle Fischbach, the state senator from Painesville, who is currently the president of the Minnesota Senate, he said he would be willing to work with her as lieutenant governor because that's the way the law works. If there's a vacancy in the lieutenant governor's office, there had been talk that there might be some kind of an arrangement for a special session to put a Democrat in that position so that the Democrat would become the lieutenant governor. But Dayton says he's content to accept a Republican in that role, which would also be an unprecedented occurrence in Minnesota politics, at least in the modern era.
Because they do run together. Not every state is like that. I used to live in Missouri where and Illinois too. It used to be okay. They weren't
right.
joined.
I think it used to be like that in Minnesota too, but in recent history, it is not.
Rachel, your thoughts? You were listening into what you heard. You've covered Tina Smith both as a campaign manager for Mark Dayton, then a chief of staff, then a lieutenant governor. Just your reflections here today as well.
Well, she was actually campaign manager for R.T. Ryback, running against Governor Dayton in 2010, and then worked for him. So that's important to bear in mind, because that's one of the things that I'm sure Republicans will bring up, that she's from Minneapolis, that she worked in Planned Parenthood, she worked in Minneapolis, you know, that she is a liberal in all the ways that, you know, Greater Minnesota likes to say Twin Cities liberals. On the other hand, the governor, when he put out her bio, stressed sort of nonpartisan issues. And in her opening statement, it was also very nonpartisan. It talked about health. It talked about broadband. It talked about struggles on the Iron Range. And so I think she's sort of building a profile of herself, not unlike Amy Klobuchar, which, although she too is a Democrat, you know, and she is pro-abortion access and all those kind of things, she's sort of saying, look, I can represent the entire state of all stripes. The other thing to bear in mind with Smith is that she does have a business background. I believe she has an MBA. And she's not untrusted by the business community on a lot of issues. She has worked closely with them, both as chief of staff to Governor Dayton and as lieutenant governor on many issues. The last thing I would note is there was a sort of a moment where I think it was Mark Sedeklik of Public Radio said if Dayton is acting as kingmaker here, and Dayton replied, queenmaker. And one of the things to bear in mind is that Minnesota will be one of the very few states in history, at least for a year, to have two female senators, which makes a statement not only in the state, but in terms of all these allegations of sexual misconduct, it may be a sea change going on there.
And again, we're talking with Rachel Stassenberger and Mike Mulcahy here. We're also inviting your thoughts here today, your reaction to this announcement, your questions that you have about how this plays out. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. And Mike, the national Republican senatorial campaign, Senate campaign in Washington is already ready. They have their first line. Their statement here, the last thing Minnesotans want is a political operative committed to raising taxes while representing them in the U.S. Senate. Minnesota voters deserve a senator who will look out for their best interests, not another DFL insider handpicked by Mark Dayton. But although, as Dayton noted, that's the Constitution says. You have to handpick it. That's exactly right. How it works.
You also see in the initial response that this abortion issue is going to be big. Tina Smith was the vice president of Planned Parenthood of Minnesota and the Dakotas. And so that's going to be an issue. We should note that Michelle Fischbach, the Republican senator who might be the new lieutenant governor, is married to the director of one of the state's largest anti-abortion groups, the Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. And we should also say that that business background that Rachel mentioned, the Republicans will look very carefully into that business background for anything they can use against her. They also, in that initial email you mentioned, noted that Governor Dayton had proposed that gas tax increase, which was not popular around the state, and they'll try to pin that on Tina Smith.
And didn't happen either.
Didn't happen, that's true, but they did support it.
Another note here, Rachel, as we look at reactions here, the Star Trib is reporting that Congressman Keith Ellison will not run for the U.S. Senate here in the special election. There had been some talk that he was potentially interested in running for Senate, but now with the announcement of Tina Smith as the U.S. Senator and the announcement that she will seek that seat, Congressman Ellison, according to the Stribs reporting here, says that he will not be seeking that. We actually hope to hear from Congressman Ellison later this hour. Rachel?
And I think that's one of the key questions, is whether Smith will be a field clearer. You know, remember, she has been a Democratic operative, and I don't know, but I wouldn't think that she would make this decision to run for 2018 without knowing that other people would basically say, okay, you know, in this special election, there's only basically a year run up, you know, that she would have the field cleared. You know, on the Republican side, there's a lot more open question of who will run and what that opponent will be like. There are female Republican officials who are looking at it, and that would also give Minnesota a reason to tune into this already very special election if we had a woman running against a woman. Governor Tim Pawlenty continues to say, I'm politically retired, but I don't quite know what he means when he says retired, because he's also looking at some offices. And so I think there's going to be sort of a shakeup on the Republican side as well.
Also on the Republican side, you know, as we saw in Alabama yesterday, these, you know, the pro-Trump wing of the party and the sort of anti-Trump wing of the party. What could that mean for this race? Whether Tina Smith will clear the field for Democrats, I think it's an open question. And as we've seen, the news cycle moves so quickly now, who knows what's going to happen 6 months from now?
Who knows what's going to happen 6 minutes from now, Mike?
That's right. That's, so, I mean, this is going to be really fascinating. And as Rachel suggested, this won't be the only seat on the ballot next year. Amy Klobuchar is up for re-election. The governor's office will be open. We have maybe four or five congressional seats which are competitive, which is really, really a new wrinkle to all this. And the House of Representatives and all the constitutional officers, the State House of Representatives, all the constitutional officers up for election. So it's going to be a busy year in politics, and hang on.
Hang on. We're talking to Mike Mulcahy and Rachel Stassenberger, and taking your calls, your comment, your reaction, but also your questions to how some of this pans out. We're going to go over that here in the next hour and a half as we bring you this special coverage of the announcement, the headline being that Tina Smith will be named to the Senate post, the Senate seat that Al Franken says he will resign from. We also learned in that news conference that Tina Smith, the lieutenant governor, the Senate senator designate, I guess we would call her now, expects that that transition will happen in early January, which is actually also when I think we're hearing about when the transition will happen from the Alabama seat, too. So we'll potentially be seeing those two new senators. Let's go to the phones here. Zarina is in New Brighton. Hi, Zarina. Your thoughts here today.
Hi. First of all, thank you for taking my call. Second, I am an immigrant woman in this country. We are 21st century, and I am so proud the opponent female today in U.S. Senate. And I'm so disappointed, Washington, how they underestimated women's rights, which is unacceptable.
Verena, thanks so much for the call there. It's just an interesting sidebar note here, Rachel, as I grab a piece of paper here. When you look at those exit polls from that Senate race yesterday in Alabama, women were 51% of the electorate. So 51% of all voters were women, and they favored Doug Jones, the Democrat, by a 57-41 margin. This is a moment, not just for women candidates, it seems, Rachel, but for women in the electorate as well.
I think that's certainly true. You know, women have tended over the years to sway a little more Democrat than men have. So I think that has long been true. But I also think that, you know, with Tina Smith, you know, she actually stressed some of the issues in her bio that your caller just mentioned. She worked on something that she called economic opportunities for Minnesota women. She also created a group that sort of recruits talented women and minority women to mentorship. She mentions advancing racial equity. You know, there certainly were those in the Democratic Party who was hoping that Dayton would appoint a woman of color to this position. That obviously did not happen. But Tina Smith has worked on diversity issues, including as the chief of staff, trying to diversify Minnesota's work ranks, and also on issues of diversity in a sort of a larger perspective. So I think that Smith is certainly trying to ramp up to speak to those issues, but we'll have to see what 2018 brings. You know, obviously last night in Alabama was a surprise to many people. Franken resigning was a surprise to many people. And, you know, as many in politics say, a year in political life can be a millennium. We don't know what's going to be the big issue in November. Right. A year from now.
Just one other note on what you said, Rachel, and I know you have to go, but you were noting about the rarity, actually, of having both U.S. senators from a state being women. This is from the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. California was the first state to send two women to the Senate at the same time. That was Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. And now you have Kamala Harris, who won the seat when Barbara Boxer didn't run for re-election. And then since that time, four other states have been represented by two women at the same time: Kansas, Maine, New Hampshire, and Washington. So that's five states total in the history. Now add Minnesota to that. And currently, so some of those states that had two women in the past, they don't anymore. So currently, there are three states that have two women in the Senate. That's California, New Hampshire, and Washington. So now, when Tina Smith takes the seat, you can add Minnesota as well.
And it's worth bearing in mind that that means that all the other states have either just one woman or mm-hmm. two men. Most of them have two men. So the Senate is still not at all at parity with the population.
And, you know, I was looking at exit polls, Mike, from the presidential race here in Minnesota last mm-hmm. year, which Hillary Clinton won. It was a tight race here. Mm-hmm. But women in Minnesota last year were 53% of the electorate, which is a bigger majority than I guess I would have expected. And they favored the Democrat Clinton by a 7-point margin. So it's just interesting when you look at those kinds of exit polls, too, about the importance of some of these voters.
Well, and I think there's sort of a larger question there, because the question is, it seemed like, based on what happened in Alabama, that Democrats are energized. You know, with the not only women but people of color mm-hmm. turning out to vote
right.
there. Typically, an incumbent president's party doesn't do so well in that first off-year election. And whether Minnesota Democrats will continue to be energized or will be energized for next year, that's a big question. Whether mm-hmm. Republicans will be energized, that's another big question. When you have a president with a national approval rating, you know, hovering around 35%.
Yeah.
That really raises some questions, but who
knows,
predict?
Right?
It's impossible to predict, so it's better to just cover it as we go.
That's what we're doing here with Mike Mulcahy, NPR News' political editor. Rachel Stassenberg, I know you have to leave, but I really want to thank you for joining us for a few minutes here with your insight as well. Thanks so much for
your
time.
Thank you so much.
We're bringing you special coverage here. Governor Dayton earlier this hour announcing that Tina Smith, the lieutenant governor, will become U.S. Senator. That is the governor's pick to make when Al Franken resigns. We don't have a specific date for Al Franken's resignation, although Tina Smith indicated early January. No specific date, but early January. Now joining me on the phone is R.T. Ryback, former mayor of Minneapolis, and he was, when he was mayor, Tina Smith was his chief of staff, and when, as Rachel noted, during your run for governor, RT, she was your campaign manager. Just your initial thoughts. I know you were in the room there for the announcement. Your reflections here. What do you make of the decision to name Tina Smith, RT?
Well, you know, whenever I had a really tough problem, it would be something kind of inside City Hall or something huge like the bridge collapse, I'd turn to Tina, and Tina would make it work. And that's been the case with the governor. And so it was perfectly logical when he had the toughest possible choice that he turned to somebody who he knows and I know, and I think most anybody who's worked with her knows, can get the job done.
You know, publicly, as you know, and this is just speaking from our perspective of what we saw, what headlines we saw, there seemed to be a hesitancy to run by Tina Smith. I'm speaking, of course, of her decision earlier this year not to run for governor. There was some question early on that if she were picked for the Senate, would she run in 2018? I'm going out on a limb here, RT, to guess that maybe you've had a talk with her, maybe you've had a text with her or two in these last few weeks. Do you have any sense of how or why that thinking changed and now she says she will run for the U.S. Senate?
You know, I find that question kind of interesting because I've heard that, and it was raised there, too, as if somehow she was somebody who didn't have the fire in the belly. Tina is passionately committed to making things better for people. I know that sounds corny, but look at her life, all right? That's what it's been about. So the governor's race, she chose to not move forward. But just because you don't move forward on one race doesn't mean you don't have the fire in the belly or the compassion. The fact of the matter is, this also is a very unusual set of circumstances. And I do know from having talked to Tina that when she looked at this situation and she looked at the position she was in, she recognized that she was in the best position to step forward. She is not a person to go crawl over every other political body to get to the place. She's a person who wants to get stuff done, and she's in the right position to do that. So don't underestimate a couple of things. One, how smart she is. Two, how much she can bring people together. And finally, the fact that this is a person who had been traveling the state for the governor for years and years, had been laying the potential groundwork for a governor campaign, and is in a great position to run, along with, hey, guess what, by the way, the potential to be an incredible senator.
What do you think? I mean, those were some of what I would presume are selling points. Obviously, you're a Democrat. You're supporting Tina Smith. You were in the room there. Think about what will be the drawbacks. What will be the challenges in this race for Tina Smith's candidacy?
Yeah, just could I make one other point just on the previous one?
Sure.
I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, when I really size up Tina Smith's skills, I think she would have been a great governor, and I think she will be a great senator. But I always thought she was better situated to the Senate, where it really requires this ability to be passionate about what you believe in and somehow figure out a way to get somebody who doesn't agree with you to find a way to work together with you. That is an amazingly consistent piece of all of Tina Smith's work, is that she has been able to walk into rooms with people who disagree with her and come out with a consensus. And I saw that time and time again. And so that, I think, is a huge piece. Now, that pivots to the question about the campaign.
Yeah.
She has to tell that story because, you know, we're used to sometimes seeing people stand up and pound podiums and make all sorts of blind statements about stuff they're never going to get done. And that's not what she does. She doesn't promise stuff she won't get done, but people will understand that. She's a really good campaigner, and I have seen her campaign, but she's not going to be somebody to throw in a couple sound bites that are going to somehow get her through the election and then get elected and go, what the hell do I do now? That is not her deal. So when something comes out of her mouth, she's going to get it done. And I think right now, after a whole lot of the showmanship and non-delivering and bombastic stuff that we see in politics, she will be a real welcome change.
That was this is Mike Mulcahy, Mayor. That was one of my questions. She's, I think, you know, with the exception of the past 3 years in the lieutenant governor's office, known as sort of a behind-the-scenes person who's, you know, making the making things run in the background. As she gets out and has to present herself to people in this campaign that's going to unfold over the next year, how is she going to be received in especially rural parts of the state?
Well, you know, there are a couple kinds of quote-unquote behind-the-scenes types. There are those types who like to get the work done and don't like to go out in public and, you know, hide behind somebody else. That's definitely not Tina Smith. Tina Smith is a person who knows how to make things work. She's got an MBA. She understands management. She knows how to get all of that done. But she's a very, very public person. And anybody who knew the way that things worked when she was my chief of staff is it was a partnership, and she was as public as I was. I got up at the press conferences. I went, I was on the news and all of that, but she was extremely public, building relationships, building coalitions, running meetings, being part of it. You've seen that with the governor as well. There's not a question about whether people in greater Minnesota know her or not. She's been out there for seven years. What's the largest single economic development strategy for greater Minnesota right now? It's Destination Medical Center. From the beginning of that idea that Mayo Clinic came to the state and said, let's do a $4.5 billion economic development strategy for Rochester that will lift the employees who come from all over southern Minnesota. She started with the idea. She did work through the legislature, just like you work through the Senate with things that she would have. Then she goes out and builds support for it. Then she was part of all those public meetings in Rochester. Then she went behind the scenes to work on details. Then she went back out in public. And so I think she shouldn't be classified as a behind-the-scenes person who's afraid of the public. She's a public person who knows how to get things done.
And you were also on that board as well for the Destination Medical Center, RT. Final question for you, Mayor. What about the argument we're going to have these now three statewide races on the ballot? I'm not talking about the constitutional offices. I get that, right, Secretary of State and Attorney General and the like. But you're going to have the governor's race and now two Senate races, Senate seats on the ballot in 2018. What do you say to the idea, and this was what one of our political analysts said last week on the show, that Minnesotans like to mix it up a bit. And so if Amy Klobuchar, for example, is a popular senator, and she, by all measurements, is, that maybe the voters will say, okay, well, she's a Democrat, so let's pick a Republican for this seat. No offense to Tina Smith, but let's make that a Republican seat.
Well, I think there's a pretty good body of evidence right now that mixed government isn't always the solution. So I don't think people are going to race the fact that it's really great to have different people and have them go to war with each other. I think they're going to be looking for something past partisanship. And they're going to be looking for people who can actually get something done, no matter what party they're from. And into that walks Tina Smith, a person who's gotten things done for decades in this state. And I think when presented with the opportunity to actually say, gee, we pay enough for government, we may as well get something in return, Tina Smith would be a very good value.
R.T. Ryback, former mayor of Minneapolis, and Tina Smith was Ryback's chief of staff during that time. Mayor, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking here with Mike Mulcahy, NPR News' political editor as well, taking your calls and questions. Kathy has a question here in Minneapolis. Hi, Kathy. What would you like to add to this conversation?
Hi, good morning. And I have great hopes and expectations for our senator-designate, Tina Smith. My question goes back to the Minnesota legislature and Senate there. This creates a vacancy in the president of the Senate position. And do you have any predictions on who might be filling that, and then what would be the resulting party balance in the Minnesota Senate? And I two other quick questions, if you have time. How many women would be serving in the United States Senate once Tina takes her position, her office? And then what committee assignments would she be interested in?
Well, we don't know the answer to the second one, Kathy, because that wasn't asked during the news conference. The answer to that other question is that she will be the 22nd woman in the U.S. Senate. And for the hard question, I'll turn to Mike Mulcahy, going back to the Minnesota Senate and the Senate president.
That is a hard question, and that's a really good question. The makeup of the Senate right now, 34 Republicans, 33 Democrats. But remember, Dan Schoen, the DFL senator, is resigning because of some of the allegations against him. So let's say we have
That election's February 12th.
Yeah, let's say we have a 34-32 Senate with the Republicans in the majority right now. If Michelle Fischbach becomes the lieutenant governor, that would be down to 33-32, and then there would have to be a special election in her district. Although, let's speculate a little bit. Now, some Republicans are arguing that she could be lieutenant governor and keep her seat in the Senate.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's quite true. And the governor said he was looking for an opinion from the attorney general's office. Yeah. That may be what he's asking about. The question there is, are we going to end up back in front of the state Supreme Court here
right.
with the governor versus the legislature? I don't know. But let's just keep that possibility
right.
hanging out there. Other possibility, maybe the legislature and the governor can agree to a special session where, say, in exchange for the governor approving the legislature's budget, which he vetoed last time out and eventually prevailed in front of the Supreme Court, say in exchange for that, Michelle Fischbach agrees to step down as president. The Senate elects a Democrat as president. That Democrat becomes lieutenant governor. They held another election in the Senate. Michelle Fischbach gets her job back as president of the Senate. And then there's a special election in some DFL district where that senator came from. I mean, that, I think, is sort of the nub of what Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka was hinting to the governor.
Yeah.
Some kind of scenario like that might occur.
And the question is, and Governor Dayton made the joke, I expect to be alive on election day, but he's talking about his health. I mean,
right.
Let's not forget he collapsed during the State of the
State. I was
there,
I remember.
Earlier this year, and his health
scary.
Has been out there. It's been out there as an issue. And so if a Republican is lieutenant governor and something were to happen to Governor Dayton, then you have a Republican governor and a Republican generalist or a Republican legislature,
right.
You arguably could just call a special session.
Well,
do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you have to wonder about the ramifications of that, though, politically,
sure.
With an election coming up in the House. But the special session scenario is tricky too, because you can see what the Senate has to deal with there. But what about the House? And we heard the governor say in his press conference, if you were listening earlier, that in order to call a special session, he would have to have an agreement from all four leaders in the legislature,
right.
That is the two Republican leaders and the two Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate. And so that becomes a little complicated, too. So I think, yeah, it's really an open question, and it's really going to be another sort of sidebar, but a fascinating sidebar of all this to watch.
But wait, there's more, Mike Mulcahy. The AP is now reporting the following.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota Senate President Michelle Fischbach says she expects to keep her spot in the Senate when she becomes lieutenant governor. According to a draft plan obtained by the Associated Press, the Painesville Republican has been told by Senate counsel that the state constitution allows the Senate president to hold both jobs, and that's what she plans to do. And Senate President Michelle Fischbach will address media at 12:30 today.
Well, we'll see about that. That's one lawyer.
That is one
lawyer.
And
you know, at the Capitol, you have a lot of lawyers. And when you get a room full of lawyers together, they don't always agree, and that's what the courts are for.
And to your point, or to the point earlier, Governor Dayton said this during the news conference when he announced Tina Smith. He has asked the Attorney General, who's a Democrat, Lori Swanson, for an opinion on what we presume is this exact question,
right,
about how all of this works. And somewhere in my pile of papers here, I have, oh, here it is, the succession plan. I don't think I should go over through this right now. This is very in the weeds, and I want to get back to your calls as well at 1-800-242-2828. But I will look through this in coming minutes, and maybe we'll come back to this topic. What I would love to do, again, is to open it up to you. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, we went down the rabbit hole a little bit there, Mike, but the news of the day, Tina Smith will be named to the U.S. Senate when Senator Franken resigns. Your thoughts on that, your reaction, 1-800-242-2828. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and don't call or text if you're driving. Catherine Pearson is a political science professor at the University of Minnesota, has joined us several times in the last few weeks to opine about all things Congress, especially, which you focus on. Catherine, what did you hear? What did you not hear in the governor and lieutenant governor's comments that are of interest to you as you watch what's unfolding here in Minnesota?
Well, I heard that Tina Smith will hit the ground running as a U.S. senator, as one of your callers asked, being the 22nd woman to serve in the current U.S. Senate, making it an all-time high of women serving. And I suspect that her knowledge of Minnesota will help her hit the ground running, but I also suspect that her Democratic colleagues will help her hit the ground running. Of course, it's harder to have legislative accomplishments in the minority party, but in the Senate, with Republicans only having a 51-vote majority, I suspect that she will be able to get a fair amount done in the next year, not even a year, before she runs for reelection. Most senators, of course, have 6 years to prove themselves to voters, and
yeah,
she'll have much less time than that. But I suspect she'll get whatever committee assignments she wants to have and really hit the ground running in terms of legislating.
So wait, is that true? Even though the Democrats are in the minority, they get to pick their party's committee assignments, that if she says, I want this, she will likely get it?
It's a little complicated in the sense that the ratios are set by the majority party, but Democratic leaders would sort of facilitate her getting the committee assignments that she wants. In general, the selection process in the Senate is some combination of seniority and Democratic leadership making those decisions.
Catherine Pearson with us from the U. We're going through reaction as well, and I had noted earlier the Star Trib reporting that Keith Ellison, the congressman from the 5th District representing Minneapolis, will not be seeking the Senate seat in this upcoming election. And just to note here, his official statement, Mike, ends with, quote, "Tina Smith is the right person at the right time and has my full support both now and when she runs in the 2018 special election." So that confirms again that Keith Ellison, who I think we had heard was interested, will not be running.
Yeah, that's a pretty big development. You remember Keith Ellison, too, was a Bernie Sanders supporter last time and might help Tina Smith greatly bring that wing of the DFL with him, but it's too early to tell. I mean, this announcement is an hour old.
An hour, not even. Let's go to Veronica and Grand Marais with a pretty good question here. Veronica, what would you like to know here today?
I'm wondering what the Republicans are facing, looking at both seats at once in the 2018 election, how to choose either the party or a particular candidate, who to run against. Does this candidate make more sense to go up against Klobuchar or up against Smith? Or what are some of those considerations?
Thanks so much for the question. Catherine, it's a really good question. What's the chess game here?
Right. Well, I think that there's no question that a strategic Republican with a lot of experience who's really looking to be a U.S. senator from Minnesota would choose to challenge Smith over Klobuchar. Klobuchar has, she won re-election by over 65% of the vote last time. Her approval ratings are high. She makes a point to visit all of Minnesota's counties annually, and she's very well known in the state. And so I think that a strategic Republican looking at the landscape would choose Smith, who has obviously much lower name recognition and will have less than a year to get to know more Minnesotans and shore up some legislative accomplishments.
Mike, who's going to run on the Republican side? I know you know all these answers, right?
Well,
but I think we already have one declared candidate who has said he's going to run against Amy Klobuchar. This was before the Franken news all started.
And that's State Representative Jim Neuberger. But it would be a tough run against Amy Klobuchar. So I think the open seat against Tina Smith is a much bigger draw for a potential Republican. But as we said before, it's a big hurdle. I mean, typically, if you're going to run for U.S. Senate, you start planning 2 years in advance and you start raising money. And this is all coming up very quickly. So ideally for the Republicans, somebody who can raise a lot of money in a hurry. And I think that's why you're hearing Tim Pawlenty's name.
We're continuing our special coverage from last hour. Governor Mark Dayton announcing his pick to become the new U.S. Senator when Al Franken steps down, which he says he will do in coming weeks. Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith was announced as that pick. Here is some of what Tina Smith said this morning.
I accept this appointment, and it will be my great honor to serve Minnesota as United States Senator. Though I never anticipated this moment, I am resolved to do everything that I can to move Minnesota forward, and I will be a fierce advocate in the United States Senate for economic opportunity and fairness. This is a difficult moment for us, but even now, I am filled with optimism for Minnesota, this big, welcoming, diverse, and resilient place that has been my home for over 30 years.
And then the question was, you are going to run for the special election in 2018. Why?
Well, this is an extraordinary moment. And in moments like this, you have to ask yourself, I had to ask myself, what was the best way for me to serve? What contribution could I make? What would that look like? I had to assess that. And as I did that assessment, it became clear to me that I'm prepared to do this, I'm qualified to do this, that I have a unique role to play here. And after I realized that, it was a very, very easy decision for me to make.
And then at the conclusion of that event last hour, she was asked about how expensive this Senate race will likely be in 2018. Here is Tina Smith's response.
Well, the conversation about campaigns and elections, I want to wait for another day, but I can tell you I shouldn't be underestimated, and if I weren't confident, I wouldn't be doing this.
Now, as I'm joined here in the studio by Mike Mulcahy, NPR News' political editor, Mike, I was able to cough up a little bit of history here today because this is the third time a governor in the last 40-something years has named a replacement U.S. senator. Last time was when Senator Paul Wellstone died in a plane crash just before the 2002 election, I should say. It was up to Governor Jesse Ventura to pick a replacement to fill Wellstone's seat for just those few weeks because we were about to have an election, the new senator would be sworn in, so the pick was only for a few weeks. Dean Barkley of the Independence Party was named, and Ventura at the time was upset about it. He says then he timed his announcement around what was the only debate in that race between Walter Mondale and Norm Coleman, because the governor was mad that third-party candidates were excluded from that debate.
Since you people are out to destroy the third-party movement, you, the media, your participants in it, then I have to do anything and everything I can for what I believe is the third-party movement, and that the third-party movement should continue, and that it takes citizens like us to keep the fight up, because certainly we get no help from you, the media.
You were covering that, right, Mike?
Well, not only covering it, but that debate was organized by NPR mm-hmm. News and Care 11.
Over at the Fitzgerald Theater.
So I guess the Governor Ventura was talking to me. It was the only debate we could get the two candidates to agree to. Mm-hmm. You know, it was such a short time period.
Right. And Walter Mondale said he would serve for 2 years if Wellstone won, because Wellstone was still on the ballot.
Well, yeah, it was I mean, you think this is big? That was big.
That was very
and,
big.
Yeah, that was our debate at the Fitzgerald Theater, right. And it was a good debate. Norm Coleman ended up winning.
And Dean Barkley did serve then for those few weeks. Then, let's go back to 1976. Walter Mondale was elected to be Vice President of the United States and resigned his seat. Here's what Governor Wendy Anderson said about who he would pick to replace Mondale in the Senate.
When Senator Fritz Mondale assumes his duties as Vice President of the United States, a vacancy will occur in one of our Minnesota seats in the Senate. It is my intention to represent the people of Minnesota in the United States Senate for the next 2 years. I didn't realize they wanted us to leave that badly. It is my hope and my prayer that the quality of my work in the Senate will earn the support of the people of Minnesota for election to a full term in 1978.
And then Wendy Anderson, after picking himself, Mike, what happened in 1978?
Well, they call it the Minnesota Massacre.
Well, if you're a Democrat, it was. Let's keep that
in
perspective.
I think the
here.
Republicans kind of like that name, too, because the Republicans pretty much swept the ticket and mm-hmm. won everything. And there was a backlash from voters. You know, we heard the question, if you were listening last hour, someone asked Governor Dayton if he was afraid of being perceived as a kingmaker, which mm-hmm. he corrected as a queenmaker.
Right.
And I think that was very much on his mind. That is something every Democrat will remember forever. That,
in Minnesota.
Right. Not to try to get too clever with one of these appointments.
And actually, as we talk about that, Catherine Pearson on the phone here from the University of Minnesota, political science professor, we have here a statement from the Republican Party of Minnesota. The chair of the party, Jennifer Carnahan, alludes to this as well, Catherine. Part of the comments says, instead of nominating a leader who can effectively represent all Minnesotans, Governor Dayton chose to play politics with Senator Franken's replacements. It's an underhanded House of Cards style move. This is clearly an attempt to throw the Republican majority in the Minnesota Senate out of balance. This move is as transparent as it is political. Catherine, how much does 1978 reverberate in the responses we're seeing today, and the ramifications and the considerations made for this seat?
Right. Well, it's no surprise that Republicans are using this as a talking point. Of course, Tina Smith is closely allied as Governor Dayton's lieutenant governor. She was former chief of staff, and so they'll be connected both in terms of politics and in terms of policy preferences. And so that will be a challenge for when Tina Smith is senator running for election in 2018, that will be one of her challenges. But I think that the way she combats that is to distinguish herself not so much from a policy perspective, but from her political style and her leadership style, and then to do what she can in the U.S. Senate. But certainly, Governor Dayton had a lot of considerations. We know from reporting, and then he said so himself, that one of the considerations was appointing someone who would be willing to run in 2018, increasing Democrats' chances of retaining the seat, but it was also his constitutional duty to fill the seat. And so by choosing someone closely allied with him, he does provide Republicans with a talking point. On the other hand, he did choose someone who will hit the ground running, knows the state extremely well, and sort of make the most of the time that she has in the Senate before running in 2018.
Did you want to add anything to that, Mike?
Well, we didn't really expect the Republicans to put out a statement saying this was a great choice. But I think you also heard, you know, the governor saying that he would welcome a Republican lieutenant governor from the state Senate if it's Michelle Fischbach, and it probably will be. Yeah. And so I think he was trying to downplay sort of the queen-making aspect there, saying, you know, I picked the best person I could find, and she just happened to be the person I've worked with for the past 7 years.
Well, let's get some thoughts from the chair of the Republican Party of Minnesota, Jennifer Carnahan, on the phone. Chairwoman Carnahan, I just read part of your statement here, but now that you're on the phone, add what you would like to add to what we just talked about here, your response to Governor Dayton's announcement here today of Tina Smith.
Yeah, today Governor Dayton did announce a very important and powerful decision that impacts all of us in the state of Minnesota. And it was disappointing that instead of nominating a leader who would be able to effectively represent everyone in Minnesota, that Governor Dayton chose to play politics and be influenced and swayed by the leaders in Washington, D.C., and make a political move in the best interest of the Democratic Party versus in the best interest of Minnesotans.
So what is it about Tina Smith that does not make her a leader in that regard? You said he should have elected, or he should have selected, a leader. Why isn't she a leader?
I think Governor Dayton had an opportunity to step up and demonstrate the true leadership and responsibility of being the governor of a very important state, our great state of Minnesota. And he had the opportunity, instead of making a political move, which he did, to actually look at electing someone that would be representative of all Minnesotans. And I don't think we can say that about Tina Smith.
Your statement says that this is clearly an attempt to throw the Republican majority in the state Senate into question, although I don't know if you've seen this. The AP is reporting that Senate President Michelle Fischbach believes she can stay in the Senate when she becomes lieutenant governor. She's going to talk to the media at 12:30 today. That's based on her legal opinion from the state Senate counsel. I would guess that the DFL side of things are going to disagree with that reading of the law. But your statement says it's an attempt to throw this out of balance. But if Michelle Fischbach says she can keep the Senate, do you agree with her that she can keep that seat?
You know, I think we'll have to see how things unfold. If she believes she can keep her Senate seat and be able to fulfill this role, then we will be supportive of her. To your point, I think the other side will come out with a different perspective, and we'll have to see how that unfolds. But again, I think this was a calculated move. I think it was a cunning move on behalf of Governor Dayton. It wasn't unexpected. We've certainly seen this type of erratic behavior out of him through his time in office. So it's just disappointing for all Minnesotans what transpired this morning.
Then who should he have picked? Give me some names.
You know, I'm not here to say who he should have picked or shouldn't have. I think the opportunity for him would have been able to take this opportunity and select someone to represent all Minnesotans,
who?
Not his right hand and inner confidant and someone that he's worked behind the scenes with and collaborated with Washington, D.C. on. I don't see how that represents what's in the best interest of Minnesota, but it is what it is. And we'll move forward, and we will defeat Tina Smith next November.
With which candidate? Who do you want to see run?
You know, there are individuals that are exploring the opportunity to run for U.S. Senate on our side, and I think in the coming weeks we'll continue to hear names emerge until those people choose to step forward. We're supportive of anyone on our side who wants to take on that challenge. We've got a deep bench of great individuals out there, so we're confident that whoever emerges will be a great candidate for us.
As we're having this moment in what is being called the Me Too moment, as we look at Senator Franken's reasons for leaving the Senate, is it incumbent on the Republican Party as it appears the Democratic Party will do, to have a woman on the ballot for that Senate race in 2018?
I think it's incumbent upon both parties to put forth the best candidates, regardless of gender, that would represent the best interests of Minnesotans across the board.
Jennifer Carnahan, the chairwoman of the Republican Party of Minnesota, you have a busy year coming ahead of you, as do all of we, but thanks so much for giving us a few minutes of your time here today.
Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Mulcahy, just initial thoughts. We're also hoping to hear from the DFL party chair, Ken Martin. I mean, it's going to be such a busy year coming up.
Well, it's interesting to think about who might be that Republican candidate for this seat. You know, other than the specific cases we've mentioned, the Minnesota Senate is not on the ballot next
year.
And so anybody in the Senate could be looking at this as sort of a free shot. You know, they could run for the seat, and if they don't get the nomination or if they lose, they can fall back on their job in the Senate. So we could see a number of people from there at least give it a very close look and maybe even run. And then, you know, as we say, it's going to be a really tough race. You're going to have to, if someone were to start out with statewide name recognition and the ability to raise a lot of money, that would give them a head start here. And there just aren't that many people like that. You could probably list them on less than one hand. So,
Senator Klobuchar, the occupant of the other Senate seat here for Minnesota, says in a statement that she, being Tina Smith, is well qualified to step into this role and be ready to hit the ground running. Catherine Pearson, what do you expect to see? We have a governor's race and two Senate races. Are these going to be situations where they're running as a slate, where you're going to see three names on the lawn signs and vote for all Democrats or vote for all Republicans? Or are these really going to become individual races and we're just going to stew about it in the ballot box for each race a lot independently? What are you gleaning so far on that?
I think it's highly likely that Senator Klobuchar and then Senator Tina Smith will run very closely connected. And that is because, of course, Senator Klobuchar is popular in the state. Her race is not considered, at this point at least, to be particularly competitive, although, of course, we still have time before 2018. But if you look at the national rankings, hers is not considered to be competitive. So for Tina Smith and Senator Klobuchar to campaign together, I think would be helpful for Smith. It also comports with Smith's style as lieutenant governor. She spent a lot of time all over the state. That's something that Senator Klobuchar does. In terms of the DFL candidate running for governor, I think in part it depends on who the candidate is and whether or not they're winning, and whether or not their strategy is to mobilize the base to really focus on the metro or to run a campaign that is sort of all over Minnesota. So I think it sort of depends. In terms of the Republican ticket, I also think it really depends on who the candidates are. Certainly, there is a fissure in the Republican Party nationally in terms of how closely candidates should be aligned with President Trump, and I think we'll see that play out in Minnesota as well. So I really think it depends on who the nominee is. I think it would be helpful in some ways, although, of course, it depends on the candidate, for Republicans to nominate a woman to challenge Tina Smith.
You know, I'm reminded, Catherine, of either a biography of Bill Clinton or some kind of memoir of someone who worked with President Clinton about when he first ran for governor of Arkansas. The very first time he ran, there was actually a very contested race for attorney general in the state of Arkansas that year. And the line in the book that I've always remembered was that Clinton was in a position where he said, "Well, heck, I'll be governor," because everyone was focused so much on the attorney general's race that they said, "Well, I'll be governor." And I'm just wondering if it's actually at all possible that the governor's race here in Minnesota could end up like that, where someone sits around and says, "Well, I'll be governor," since everyone's focused on the Senate race. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it is important to realize that different laws dictate campaign finance for the two races. And federal laws essentially mean that there'll be a lot more spending on the Senate races than there will be on the governor's races. We tend to see Senate races, you know, that are, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars, where as the governor's races cost millions as well, but many fewer millions. And so that dynamic will play out where there's more money raised by the senatorial candidates and there's probably more outside money for the Senate candidates as well. So certainly we'll see more ads, more staff, more resources spent on the Senate races. And so that could have an effect on how much attention voters are paying.
It'll be interesting to see, Mike, what the online, the social media plans are for all of these campaigns as well.
Right. And I think when you look at the candidates running for governor, whether they might switch, you have to wonder if Tina Smith won't sort of clear that out on the DFL side and they'll stick with running for governor. But on the Republican side, that seems conceivable. I mean, there are a half dozen people from each party running for governor right now.
And so some of them, you're saying, may decide to run for Senate instead.
Right. If things start to shape up and it looks like somebody can't gain traction in the governor's race, they might think seriously about switching to the Senate race.
Catherine Pearson from the University of Minnesota, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate your thoughts here today. In your perspective, to add all of this to the mix here. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're continuing here with Mike Mulcahy, NPR News political editor, and we're taking your calls at 1-800-242-2828. Robert is in Golden Valley. Hi, Robert. Your thoughts today. Thanks for waiting, too, by the way.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks, Tom. My question revolves around what kind of help or assistance do you think Tina Smith can expect from the current staff of Klobuchar's and Franken's offices kind of moving forward, because, I mean, she may hit the ground running, but she's got to have staff. And the second question would be, any word on or speculation on what Dennis McDonough's plans or ambition might be, Obama's former chief of staff?
Right. He's originally from Stillwater. Second question on that, Mike, is I haven't heard much from Dennis McDonough at all, aside from him being here in the Twin Cities for an event with Minroast a few months ago. I don't know that he's
thinking.
I think
he gave a speech up in at St. John's University, too.
That's right.
But, yeah, I haven't heard much about him being active here in terms of, you know, elective office. The question about the staffs of the senators, I think, is a very interesting one. And we heard Tina Smith say that she is going to meet with Senator Franken's staff this afternoon in St. Paul. She said that she had high praise for them, saying they've done a great job for the people of Minnesota. And I believe she said she hoped that she could convince some of them to stay with her. And I think that is probably a likely thing that she would want to do, and maybe some of the staff would want to stay with her too, because that would just ease the transition so much. And, you know, when we talked about the timing of all this, since Senator Franken hasn't actually said when he intends to step down specifically, there was Amy Klobuchar told our Mark Sedeklik last week that she thought the current session would go till right around Christmas. And Al Franken would stay for that, so his vote would matter then. And that after that, he would probably leave around the first of the year so they could smooth out that transition and figure out what to do with the staff.
And I've noticed this too. There's a lot of accolades for Senator Franken's staff for whatever reason. There's a lot of indication that he put together a pretty good group of people in terms of, you know, think about how much of this job is constituent services. I need help getting a passport. This is happening here. This is happening there. Can you help me out? It's stuff you never hear about in the headlines day to day. But that staff work is pretty crucial as
well. And remember, there are two staffs too. I mean, there's the one here in Minnesota that works on things like that. And then there's the one in Washington that helps a senator prep for those hearings or, you know, figure out their positions on issues, you know, helps with speeches and talking points and things like that. So, yeah, it's complicated. And it sounds like Tina Smith wants to rely on Al Franken's staff.
And we did just see the news here from the AP that House and Senate leaders in Washington have apparently reached an agreement in principle on a sweeping tax package. And the plan always, at least from Mitch McConnell's perspective, was that he wanted to have this done by Christmas, that big tax bill that we've been talking about. And so in that case, Senator Franken would still be casting what I am assuming is still a pretty solid no vote.
I'm not an expert on Washington politics, but I would imagine that also has something to do with wanting to take a vote before the new senator from Alabama yes. is seated, who's a Democrat.
And Chuck Schumer this morning called for that tax bill vote to be delayed for that very reason, wait for Doug Jones to be seated.
Let's keep an eye on that.
We'll see if that happens. Back to the phones here. Julie is in Minneapolis. Hi, Julie. Your thoughts here today. Hi, Julie. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead. What's your question here today?
Is it possible for Senator Franken to change his mind and decide not to resign?
That is a question that has really gained some traction on social media. Former Governor Arne Carlson brought it up again this week, saying that Senator Franken didn't really receive due process when it comes to vetting all these complaints against him, the 8 complaints, I believe. It seems unlikely, and we heard Governor Dayton say today that he has talked to Senator Franken, that he believes Senator Franken was sincere in announcing that he would resign and that Senator Franken is a man of his word, I believe is what the governor said. It would seem to be extremely difficult for Al Franken to walk that back at this point. The governor also, though, said that he is appointing Tina Smith or naming Tina Smith as the person he would like to see
right.
when Al Franken steps down. I think, and I may be overthinking this, but in kind of a weird way, if Roy Moore had won last night in Alabama, it might have strengthened Al Franken's case to stay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with Doug Jones, the Democrat, winning, with you know all the allegations that had been in play against Moore, I think that it makes it more likely that Franken will follow through on his decision to resign.
Technically, though, legally, just to answer her question from a legal standpoint, he hasn't submitted any paperwork, so he could. Just because you give a speech on the floor doesn't mean you are bound by that. You could change your mind. You're talking about the politics of whether
the likelihood of it. Yes. That's right.
Well, let's ask that question as well of Ken Martin, who is the chair of the Minnesota DFL party. Ken, thanks so much for your time. I guess we'll start with there. Have you heard any indications? I mean, that was asked during the news conference here this morning with the governor and the lieutenant governor about whether Senator Franken will change his mind. Do you have any sense of that?
You know, first off, thanks for having me on. And as far as I know, at this point, Senator Franken is planning on resigning in early January, and that there hasn't been a change in his thinking at this point. That's not to say that there won't. But, of course, we are all operating under the assumption that when he made his speech on the floor of the Senate last week, that it is his intention to resign. And every indication I have from talking with his staff is that he plans to do so in early January.
Congressman Ellison has put out a statement this morning saying he is excited to support Tina Smith when she runs for election in 2018 for that Senate seat. There has been a question, Ken, of whether other Democrats, and this was going back to when it was a placeholder question, but with Tina Smith now saying she's going to run, do you expect any other Democrats to enter that race for the 2018 open seat?
Well, it's too early to tell, but what I can say is that clearly there's been an outpouring of support from all parts of the state, from many of our elected officials, and even potential candidates that have been rumored to be thinking about it. I think if there's anyone that can be a consensus candidate on our side, it's Tina Smith, and we're certainly very excited about her running for this position, and really excited that Governor Dayton appointed her to this position. There's no one better fit to take this position and this appointment than Tina Smith. And I'm really excited about working with her, both in this transition into this role as our new U.S. Senator, but of course, as she also starts to embark on her campaign.
Let me ask, this is a pretty crass question, Ken, and I apologize for that, but does any of this matter? If the 2018 election is about a referendum on Donald Trump, does it matter who the individuals are on both sides, on whichever party are actually running in the race?
Well, sure it matters. I mean, it matters, you know, in terms of what that person brings to the table and what type of public servant they will be. And I would say that there's people in both parties, frankly, that haven't always lived up to that standard. And one of the things that Minnesotans and frankly, Americans should expect is that when they send people to Washington, regardless of party, that those people are going to do everything they can to actually govern in the best interest of the people they serve. And so for me, it does matter. It's not just about electing a Democrat or electing a Republican. What this is about is electing people who share our values, who are going to stand up and speak truth to power. And like I said, put their country over party and their oath to the people that they were elected by ahead of their oath to their political party. And I believe that passionately. And that's why I'm so excited about Tina Smith, because she truly is one of those public servants who has respect on both sides of the aisle. She's a consensus builder. She's a person who's brought people together countless times over the course of her career to deal with difficult situations. And of course, there's no more difficult situation than what we're facing right now in Washington with this existential threat of Donald Trump and the Republicans, who continue to prove each and every day that they really have no interest in serving the best interests of Americans. And so I do think it matters. I think it matters a lot. And of course, you know, the stakes right now in terms of the Senate couldn't be any higher. And this is going to be one of those marquee races. So putting up a candidate who already has the trust of Minnesotans is an important part of that equation.
I'm just curious, did you talk to Governor Dayton or Lieutenant Governor Smith at all about the choice and whether she should run specifically?
As you know, I'm very close with both Mark and Tina. It's one of the reasons I'm here as chair. And of course, I had conversations with both of them over the course of the last several days. I was honored to be able to be asked for my input. And of course, I provided that. And I'm very pleased with the outcome here. I think it was the right choice. And, you know, now we move forward and figure out, again, how we transition Tina into this role as a new U.S. senator. And then, of course, help her when she starts to embark on this campaign.
And just a final clarification, was your input when you were asked for it that whoever the governor picks should be someone who is going to then run for the seat? Was that a specific piece of input you gave?
Well, I'm not going to share the contents of the conversation I had with the governor or with Tina. I will tell you there's lots of different ideas on how to approach this, but that I fully support what the governor did. I think it was the right move and the right choice. And in the end, you know, as Tina said today, you know, it's going to be up to the voters in November to decide whether or not she should be ultimately, you know, elected to the Senate to fill out the remainder of the term. And I know, as well as I've known Tina, and I've known her for, you know, over 20 years, and I've worked with her in different capacities, there's no one that's going to work harder to earn the trust of Minnesotans than Tina Smith. And from that vantage point, I feel really good about where we're headed.
Ken Martin, DFL Party Chair, thanks so much for your time here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
So Mike Mulcahy, we've heard from the party chairs of both parties here. I think they're starting to try out their talking points about what's good or bad about Tina Smith, how this race is going to go. What are you gleaning from these initial goes by the party? I mean, part of a party chair's job is to come up with these talking points and frame those races. What are you hearing from the two parties here?
Well,
so
I think another part of the chair's job is to unify the party. And I think what we're hearing from the Democrats is let's get behind Tina Smith. And we heard that from Keith Ellison. We're certainly hearing that from Amy Klobuchar. We're hearing that from Mark Dayton. We're hearing from Tina Smith herself, you know, that she's ready to do this. She wants to do it. And so I think they're really trying to clear the field and say, you know, Tina Smith is our best shot at keeping this seat. Let's do it. I think what we're hearing from the Republicans is, number one, I think we're hearing that the abortion issue is going to be big in this because of Tina Smith's past work for Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. I think that we'll see Republicans try to hang everything they didn't like about the Dayton administration onto Tina Smith's shoulders. I think, you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty about who the Republican candidate will be and who is even considering it. And so a lot has to play out, but in one way you can see it as the Republicans now have somebody to sort of train their attacks on, and the Democrats have someone they can bolster up.
Let's go back to the phones here. Scott, who is in Richfield. Hi, Scott. Thanks for waiting. Your question here today.
Yeah, you mentioned this last hour about the probably difficulties that Tina is going to have raising funds. Is it possible that Al Franken, who probably has millions in his war chest, to give that to her to help her fundraising?
Oh, that's a really good question, and I had a similar question that I asked of some of our reporters last week. And Al Franken has a lot of money on hand. I was going to check the exact number before I came in here, but I forgot. But it's a lot of money and no debt. How much of that he can transfer, I think, is limited by federal law. Mm-hmm. I think it's limited in terms of the same amount you or I could spend on a Senate candidate, which is, you know, more than I could spend because I don't have any money. But yeah, it's not millions of dollars. Senator Franken, and I think this is a point worth making here. Senator Franken was one of the most effective fundraisers for Democrats, not only here in Minnesota, but across the country. And the circumstances under which he is leaving his job put that role of his in peril. And as we talk about how much money it's going to cost to run this race, I think there's a real question for Democrats: who is going to step into that role, and who will be sort of one of the lead fundraisers here in Minnesota?
Senator Franken just sent out a statement saying Tina Smith will make an excellent United States senator, and he ends by saying, I look forward to working with her on ensuring a speedy and seamless transition.
So I guess that answers that question as to whether he's really going to follow through and resign.
Not directly, but basically, right? Mm-hmm. He says, yes, I'm going to do this as a transition. On the phone with me now here is Congressman Keith Ellison of Minnesota's 5th Congressional District. Congressman, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Hey, Tom. How's it going, man?
I am good. Your statement today alludes to the fact that you won't run for U.S. Senate. What consideration were you giving to this race?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, you have to think about it. You have to think, you know, can I serve the people of my state effectively as a legislator? I'm sure that I could do that in the Senate. But I think that Tina is the right choice. I support her. I believe in her. And I also don't think I'm the only one who could do it. There were other people whose names were thrown out there who would be very good, too. But I think Tina is the right one, and I'm glad to be supporting her, and I'm going to be campaigning really hard for her. And I ask everybody who was thinking about supporting me to support her.
Do you think it also, as an extension of that, clears the field, so to say, on the Democratic side? Do you expect any other Democrats will jump in to challenge Tina Smith?
You know, I don't know. I would say this. She already has a group of serious campaigners at her back. I mean, in my district last summer in 2017, we knocked on 50,000 doors. And so I wasn't even on the ballot, and we were campaigning like we were. So whoever runs against her is going to have to consider the fact that, I'm going to be campaigning hard for Tina.
You also have the hat of the DNC's vice chair at a national level.
Yeah.
Certainly the 2018 elections are of mine. What are you taking from yesterday's election in Alabama as far as how the vote turnout was, how they got people to the polls or didn't get people to the polls? What lessons have you seen from Alabama that might then translate here in Minnesota and other states, obviously, as you work on that national level?
Well, you know, Alabama really turned out the vote. I mean, people, particularly the African-American community, turned out at levels comparable, if not higher, than 2008 and 2012 for Obama. So people really turned out. You know, I think that there is a hunger and a thirst out there for people to address, for politicians and political leaders to address, you know, what's really going on in people's lives. So, for example, the average income in Alabama is $11,000 less than the national average. You go into Alabama, you can win if you talk to people of any and all colors and backgrounds about how to put food on their table. If you can talk, if you will talk to them and listen to them about the real challenges they have to take care of their families, you can win. So like in Minnesota and all over the country, we start with going directly to people, building a relationship with them. And then we listen to them. They're going to tell us, I'm not making enough money, my bills are too high, and people will tell you stories. They'll tell you, you know, when I worked just to keep on working, mm-hmm. and I don't feel like I'm getting ahead. And I always wanted my kids to go to college. I don't know if we can afford that. People will tell you these stories if you listen to them, and then you get out there and you organize, and you will win. And that's the story. That's the Minnesota story. And that was a story in Alabama yesterday.
You know, we heard from pundits to say yesterday with the Alabama race that if Doug Jones was going to have a chance as a Democrat, at least 25% of the electorate needed to be from the black community.
Yeah.
It ended up being 29% of the electorate.
Right.
And that black vote went 96-4 for Doug Jones.
Well, particularly black women, who I think were 98.
98. You're right. Black women were. Well, do you need to do the same thing then in Minnesota? Do you need to get us? Do you have to say X percent of the electorate has to be from the black community specifically to ensure, you know, in this case, all three of those statewide races would go in the direction you would want to see them go?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, in Minnesota, there are some key demographics that have to come out. Obviously, you know, African Americans, Latinos, Hmong community. Native vote is critical, particularly in outstate Minnesota. But we also just got to really go out there and get all Minnesotans of all colors to really get out there. We got to talk to working class people who really do need to worry about how much milk costs. They really do need to be concerned about the fact that their rent has been going up, but their pay has been staying flat. Now, that means you got to talk to rural Minnesotans. In Minnesota and Alabama are different. The demographics are clearly different. And in Minnesota, you know, you can't just say we're going to go to the Twin Cities, Duluth and Rochester, and that's a wrap. No, you better be talking to folks in Ely, Zumbrota, and you better be talking to folks in Moorhead and all throughout the state. You got to get yourself up to Detroit Lakes and sit down and listen. And that is how you will win in Minnesota. Yes, you have to get communities of color out, but you got to get out the white community, the rural community, and people in the range who, you know, are desperate for a strong economy as well. And so it's different demographics and from one state to another, but you can't ignore the rural parts of the state.
Final question for you, Congressman. Is it a missed opportunity? This was asked during the news conference that the nominee or the appointment isn't a person of color or a woman of color specifically.
Well, let me tell you this. I think that Tina is a great candidate. I think that Tina's value system will be one that people of color and women will feel that she's fighting for them. And so, look, you know, obviously we always need to be trying to make sure that the people who are in office, you know, really do reflect the diversity of our country. But I don't think anyone did poorly with the selection of Tina Smith. I think everybody is going to benefit from the excellent leadership she's going to bring to us.
Congressman Keith Ellison, thanks so much for your time here today. I appreciate it.
You got it. Take care.
And as we noted there earlier, Mike Mulcahy, Keith Ellison not going to run for the Senate.
Right. And I thought he brought up some really interesting points about demographics and geography in Minnesota, because Minnesota, obviously a much different state from what we saw yesterday. But this metro-rural divide mm-hmm. in Minnesota that really come up even more starkly in the last few years. And I think that's going to be a real key in this next year in Minnesota politics as we have these major offices on the ballot.
We're going to turn actually to spend a few minutes on the national thing, national perspective. I'm going to talk to Ken Rudin here in a moment. Final thoughts, Mike, as I let you go and have a busy day because you have now more work to do.
I have work to do. That's right. But I just think that this is a fascinating development. I think that statement from Al Franken that you just read on the mm-hmm. air is a fascinating development. And it made me think, what is Al Franken's role going to be after this? Will he be campaigning in Minnesota over the next year? Will people want to campaign with him? There are so many questions in all this, and not least of which is what happens with the succession to lieutenant governor. And we'll keep watching it. Stay with us. Keep listening. We'll try to be on top of it, and it's going to be quite a journey.
Thanks for being here, Mike.
Delighted.
We'll be right back with Ken Rudin.
Support comes from Half Price Books, offering holiday gift ideas for the book lover, including new releases, bestsellers, collectibles, even signed editions. More at neighborhood Half Price bookstores or at hpb.com.
Programming is supported by Books for Africa. In its 30th year of working to end the African book famine, with over 40 million books sent, visit booksforafrica.org to see how to put a book in the hands of an African student.
Tom Weber on NPR News. Finally this hour, Ken Rudin, the political junkie, usually joins us on Mondays. But goodness gracious, Ken, it's already been a week, so why not bring you back on Wednesday? Thanks for coming on the show here.
I think it's only fair, and I think I want to thank the voters of Alabama for making this the most unbelievable Senate race in memory.
Before we get to that, one note here. What are you seeing? Again, we have our own Minnesota perspective on the announcement here today, and it's obviously being covered on a national level. Tina Smith, the lieutenant governor, will take Franken's seat when he does resign. What are you seeing at the national level as reaction to this?
I think the feeling is it's a smart move, naming a woman to the Senate seat, obviously, given the fact that Al Franken and John Conyers and others, including some Republicans as well, have resigned over sexual harassment charges. And I think that the fact that women are coming forward, as we saw last week with the women who are reminding us of their accusations of harassment from Donald Trump in the past. And given the fact that, given the back and forth between Trump and Kirsten Gillibrand over sexual harassment and things like that, I think it's a smart move. I don't know much about Tina Smith as far as her abilities as a candidate. I know she's highly thought of as a behind-the-scenes person and a smart strategist and a wise counsel. But, of course, you know, we'll see. I mean, I guess she ran as part of Dayton's ticket in 2014, but I've never seen her run on her own. And we'll see that, assuming she runs for the seat.
Which she says she's going to do.
2018. Yeah. That's what she says, right?
And in fact, to that point, I'm going to take a quick call here. I'm going to transition now to the Alabama race. And David in Minneapolis has a thought on that as well. David, your thoughts here today. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. People so often whine and cry that, why go out and vote? My vote doesn't matter. I'll just stay home. It's not going to make a difference. Folks in Alabama, prove that your vote makes a difference. Get out to the ballot box, cast your ballot, and it really, really counts. Now, if they would just use that going forward in future races, I think it could really make a difference. Just point to the people in Alabama. Hey, folks, it makes a difference.
David, thanks so much for the thoughts there. Ken, which of the many amazing and fascinating exit poll numbers are you most focused on when you look at how Doug Jones won that race in Alabama?
Well, first of all, let's not dismiss what David had to say, because every vote does count. I mean, you think of how Donald Trump was elected in 2016, especially with narrow margins in Michigan and Wisconsin. Had he not gotten those states, and of course Pennsylvania as well, he wouldn't have been president. So whatever you think about the Electoral College, David is right. Every vote does count. I think there were so many things I noticed. Of course, you know, it wasn't so much it's a combination of things. The fact that the African-American turnout was much higher than predicted. I mean, people were saying, as we saw in 2016, well, Barack Obama wasn't on the ballot, so the blacks didn't come out as much as higher numbers for Hillary Clinton as they did for Barack Obama. But having said that, given Roy Moore's history, and given his views on race and cultural issues as well, I think the black turnout was very, very impressive. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that the turnout among African American men was 96-4 for Doug Jones. I'd love to know that 4% that backed backed Roy Moore. But having said that, and also the fact is not so much the exit polls, the fact that people like Richard Shelby, who got an understated amount of credit for what happened yesterday, because he stood up to Donald Trump, he stood up to Steve Bannon's and those folks, and said that, look, this is not what the Republican Party stands for or should stand for, and I'm going to vote for somebody else. I mean, he didn't vote for Doug Jones, but he certainly didn't vote for his Republican candidate, Roy Moore.
Well, you know, and you had 22,000 write-in votes in a special election, which is more than the margin of victory for Doug Jones. You also had women making up a majority of the electorate. They were 51% of all votes, and they voted for Doug Jones by a 57-41 spread. And as you noted there, black voters in Alabama were 29% of the electorate. I think the goal there was 25% for Doug Jones, and it was overwhelmingly 96-4 for Doug Jones. I don't know that you can point to any one of those, but all of those add up. I mean, there's this thought that in such a deep red state, so many things had to go right for Doug Jones, and it just looks like they did.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is that nobody really with any confidence thought that Doug Jones was going to win. The fact that Donald Trump won the state by 28 percentage points last year, it's just such a ruby red state. And it wasn't that Doug Jones was like a moderate who tried to skirt some issues like abortion. He was very strongly in favor of a woman's right to choose. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, he wasn't mealy-mouthed about it at all. And so Alabamians had to make that decision whether they support somebody who is pro-choice, which is not a popular position in Alabama, or somebody who's been accused of such horrific sexual improprieties, even if he is a Republican. And that just, you know, left a lot of people with an interesting choice. I'm not convinced it's the worst decision or the worst result in the world for the Republican Party, because given the fact that, you know, the Democrats forced out Al Franken, forced out John Conyers, others as well in the entertainment and the business community, and the fact that the Democrats want to run against a Roy Moore, Donald Trump kind of Republican Party, I think the Republican Party basically dodged a bullet by Roy Moore not winning, because had he won, he probably would have been expulsion hearings, and that would have split the Bannon/McConnell wing of the Republican Party, which is what they don't need.
You know, there's something I'm seeing on Twitter mostly here and on social media here today, that there are prominent Republicans suggesting now that Doug Jones caucus with the Republicans. Norm Coleman, the former senator, Norm Coleman from Minnesota, former senator, tweeted this morning or last night, Doug Jones's surest path to re-election announced tomorrow he's switching parties and joining the GOP. This was not a pro-Jones, anti-Trump, anti-GOP vote. It was a couldn't-stomach-a-vote-for-Roy-Moore night. Cory Gardner from Colorado also alluded to the same thing. Ken, what's going on there? Do you think that... I don't think that's going to happen, but what's going on there?
I do like strange fantasies like that, but the thought of Cory Gardner and the rest of the Republican conference in the Senate welcoming a pro-choice Republican, look, numbers are numbers, but, you know, we've seen in Republican primaries that so-called big tent doesn't really work with Republican primaries, especially when you have a Steve Bannon wing of the party out there that's trying to make the Republican Party even more pure. The thought of Doug Jones switching to the Republican Party and then surviving a primary in 2020 is beyond belief. But having said that, look, if we couldn't predict Doug Jones the day of the election, if we couldn't predict Trump over Hillary Clinton the day of the election, I'm not going to make a prediction for 2020, but still, that seems kind of outlandish.
Let me get your thoughts here in the final minutes here, Ken. Just today, House and Senate leaders in Washington say they have a tentative deal on a tax bill, and Tina Smith won't be seated till the new year. Doug Jones probably won't be either. The state of Alabama can't even certify those results till after Christmas. Chuck Schumer said today, we are asking Mitch McConnell to delay the tax bill vote until Doug Jones is sworn in. Democrats will also point out that the Democrats who then led Congress did do this during the Obamacare debate when Scott Brown won the seat and they lost a vote there. They waited for Scott Brown to be seated. Any chance of the Republicans waiting on that tax bill vote, or does the deal announced today get voted on before Christmas?
No, first of all, they've said from the beginning they want it on President Trump's desk before Christmas. I'm hearing stories that Mitch McConnell said he'll seat Doug Jones after the Senate votes on Merrick Garland's nomination for the Supreme Court. No, I made that up, of course. But yes, it's true what you said, what the Democrats did back in 2010 after Scott Brown was elected. They waited, but Mitch McConnell is that the Republicans are so hungry for a win. They see it in, they see it coming in the form of this tax bill. They are not going to jeopardize anything by having a 51-49 Senate.
So the vote will happen before Christmas is your estimation.
Yes, and it looks like it'll pass. If, as long as the Susan Collinses and the John McCains of the world are not rebelling, and they don't look like they are, it looks like the Republicans will get that victory they so sorely need.
So what are the 17 big stories going to be next week then, Ken?
Well, we don't have a shutdown coming, but we still certainly have to fund the government. And of course, if that goes on into 2018, you know that Doug Jones' victory in Alabama makes it a much more difficult task for the Republicans. They could no longer afford to lose more than one Republican. In the past, it was just two they couldn't afford to lose more than. Now it's only a 51-49. They only have the luxury of losing one. And with all the things coming up, including the DREAM Act, it sounds like that Republicans are going to have to rely more on Democrats than they had hoped to or expected to.
Ken Rudin, thanks so much for your thoughts here today. Appreciate you joining us here on a busy political news day. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Ken Rudin, The Political Junkie. Find his podcast, The Political Junkie, wherever you get your podcasts.